When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
A man's, you know, perception of adultery is different than a woman's. I think physical, like if Stephanie had a physical affair, I would be much more prone to be like going to a divorce. Whereas she would probably be that same way about emotional affair for me, if I had an emotional affair. So you have to be careful how you're addressing these things legalistically, because you can get down a real rough trail of like giving no grace. And then when you need the grace, we're starting off pretty heavy and we're actually already live. So welcome everybody. We're talking about marriage, all things relationships. We have a couple of experts here that really, honestly, I don't know, this is free marriage advice for you. On paper, this would cost a lot of money. So free for you, this is the holiday season. So it's our gift to you. We have Dr. Jeremy Lelick in the studio today. Welcome.
Good to be here.
And Susan Thomas. She is the better half of Brandon and Susan Thomas of Keystone Church.
Happy to be here.
Brandon's in the room too, so he can throw something at me if he wants, but I think he'd probably agree with that as well.
I don't know about that.
We're talking today about some just marriage related items. You know, we're going through this time and season where everything's heating up for family time. In-laws are coming in town, you've got kids back home, and you can either have a great holiday season or you can go through it with a smile on your face but frustration in your heart. So we're going to try to resolve that today on the show. Before we start, we have a brand new couples devotional out called I Will. This is from Jimmy and Karen Evans, and this is brand new. You want to get this. This is a perfect holiday gift for your, I don't know, kids, for friends, family, for yourself. Go to Amazon right now. You can find this I Will. It's a 365-day promises for your marriage. It's something you can do every single day next year with you and your spouse, or if you have somebody you want to give that to as well. It's a great resource for them. So you can check it out at exomarriage.com or amazon.com. And really today I want to talk about, we have coming up National Divorce Day. Now this is something that we're trying to educate people on. Stephanie and I have talked about this for years. It's something where it's a real day. First business day of the new year, people come back into their work life and their first call typically, or their first Google search is divorce lawyer in my area. And so family law offices see a spike in calls on the first business day after the new year. It's called National Divorce Day because it's just a reality that there is a moment in time where couples have gone through the holiday seasons and they've just been putting on their happy face. And then at some point they're just done, and their moment, their first opportunity, they go to the website or to the phone and they call their divorce lawyer. And so what we're trying to do is educate people that there's a better way. You can avoid that call, that Google search, if you'll just prepare yourself for what's about to happen coming up over the next couple of weeks during the holiday season. And if you're already in a bad place, it can only get worse if you're not in a good mindset. But sometimes you get surprised at how bad things are because you're not really expecting that nuclear moment where your mother-in-law says something and then you just realize
it's always the mother-in-law
putting it. I guess it could be a father-in-law, but for whatever reason in society, the mother-in-law has been given that villain role.
She has. And I'm a new mother-in-law, so I refuse it. I rebuke it.
Yes. It's one of those things where it's easy to talk about it until you're in the shoes.
On the other side.
And then you kind of have to walk through a process of going, probably analyzing, over-analyzing, making sure that you're not. But then you can kind of go like a pendulum. You can go to the opposite direction and be too inclusive of all those things. And so, I feel for you.
I'm all in.
The first thing I want to talk about today was we have a news story that came, headlines that just came up not too long ago. This is an interesting story. It was a big news item about a month ago because this was the most expensive wedding of the year. They had a $60 million wedding in Paris, this couple did. And this is a local couple. And this, so I read about the $60 million wedding in Paris. That was the big Instagram newsflash. Mm-hmm. And then just recently, somebody on our team sent me a news article where the groom just got arrested for shooting at Fort Worth police officers.
Oh, wow.
And so, but the shooting happened in March of this year. So in March, they were having an argument, 2 a.m. on the driveway, and neighbors were called. Our neighbors called the police. Police showed up, and the groom, this was the fiance at the time, shot at the police officers. Wow. And then 8 months later, they had a $60 million wedding in Paris.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So what I want to ask both of you, and ladies first, is what's a bigger red flag going into a wedding than shooting at police officers?
I mean,
drunk
really,
in 2 a.m.
Yeah,
spiel.
Have you ever had one,
Do you reward that with a $60 million wedding?
Good.
I need your best answer right now.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I feel like this is a high stakes answer.
I know. But truthfully, I'm sure you see this in the church world as well. You see couples getting married, falling in love, but you see red flags. And so how do you approach marriage for young people who have stars in their eyes and can't see the reality of things? And then they're going into a wedding and they're putting a bunch of money into the wedding and they're not even thinking about the cost of divorce. I would like to talk through that, but just give me from the pastor's perspective and an LPC perspective, what you think.
Sure. I think that this is a pattern that's really common. I think that we get excited and we have desires deep on the inside. I want a relationship. I want a companion for life. It's a deep longing of the heart. And I think from a woman's perspective, for example, we started young age writing that cute boy's last name behind our first name. Mm-hmm. Because we're hoping, like, what would that look like if I was his wife one day and we're in fifth grade, right? Mm-hmm. But we do those things. And so often we can view that relationship and then that coming wedding as I have arrived. The wedding, we get the bridal magazines, or we look online, or we start the Pinterest board. And so we have all this expectation, but we really have no idea what comes after the wedding. Mm-hmm. We have no idea that the wedding is just the beginning and the real work comes after the wedding. And so I think a lot of times, because we have such a strong desire, we're willing to dismiss the red flags that were showing up along the way. Oh, he'll change, you know, and I'm speaking from a woman. Same thing for a man. You may see those things in her. And oh, you know what? Once we're together, I'll influence her, or I'll be able to change him. And those are some really tragic, tragic lies that we believe. Because as we know in this room, marriage is not easy. Mm-mm. Marriage is hard, and it's two sinful, broken people coming together. And neither of us can change each other. That's only going to be a God transformation. And so helping couples in premarital counseling really dive into some of those potential future fights, mm-hmm. and maybe even red flags that, hey, I know it may be devastating to consider calling off a wedding, but I promise you the pain of calling off a wedding that is not God's best for either of you is far less destructive than going through with that wedding onto the other side, mm-hmm. potentially on a pathway to divorce. I think one of the most struggling things as a counselor is when I'm sitting in premarital counseling, and this has happened on occasion, where I believe I'm looking at a future divorce. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've even had to tell the couple this. Mm-hmm. And that's hard.
It is hard. Mm-hmm. But it's so much better for them to hear that up front.
Yes.
So much more better. So... You know, the reality is you just have puppy love, and you can't see the obvious red flags there that are going to get worse, not better, once you say I do, and you're living with somebody full time. Mm-hmm. Dr. Lelick, what would you say?
Well, I definitely agree with Susan. I can't tell you how many times in my counseling office, 1 year in, 5 years in, 20 years in, that I have heard the comment, I saw the red flags when we were dating, and I just didn't pay attention.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And because they didn't pay attention to that, or didn't have the courage to lean into that and ask good questions of themselves, very often those red flags lead them into my office, where it's deteriorated to a place of absolute trauma and pain. Mm-hmm. And it's very important, if folks are out there that are not married but planning a marriage, if they see red flags, go to someone, talk about those red flags, and have the courage to look at it with honest eyes, mm-hmm. because those red flags are probably signals. Well, they're definitely signals you need to pay attention to and see if they can be resolved.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Just real quickly, because the reason y'all are both on the show today is because y'all have known each other for a long time.
Yeah.
So just talk a little bit about how you got to know each other, your backgrounds, your counseling backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Just tell a quick story, Jeremy. You start about y'all's relationship professionally in the counseling space.
Yeah. So back in 2000, I was entering into what's called a practicum in my graduate school, and that's where you go and get 300 hours of actual practical counseling experience. And we were working for Christian ECA. Counseling Associates. Mm-hmm. At the time, and that's where I landed in my practicum, and we ended up in the same office 20 years ago.
Yes.
And I was very nervous and insecure and thinking maybe I've gotten into the wrong profession.
Yeah.
I felt overwhelmed, and I just remember coming into Susan's office. She had been counseling for a while, and she was just a major encouragement. Mm. We had just had our first son. You guys probably had your first daughter.
Yes, we had Elle. Yes.
And so from then on, we've just been very dear friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love his wife, Lynn, and you and Brandon have been sweet. We've been sweet colleagues and friends now for decades. Yeah. And I started in the counseling field in 96 is when I graduated with my master's and began my journey with practicum and getting my hours, and actually took a break for a couple of years, worked in the corporate world, and honestly was frustrated in the counseling field like you. Mm-hmm. I thought, what in the world am I doing? Mm-hmm. But I was discouraged because I could not reconcile what I believed biblically in my worldview with the counseling education that I received in my master's degree. And so I thought, well, you know what, this just isn't for me. And then I found my way back, and the Lord honestly directed my steps to get training in biblical counseling that equipped me and gave me great confidence. And so that by the time we met for the first time, I had been back in the counseling field. And, you know, that's been over 20 years ago of just having the privilege to walk with people and see God do incredible things. I don't think either of us could be in this field if we didn't see the life change. Mm-hmm. It would be way too discouraging.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the part that keeps me in the game, is when you see a marriage that's beyond repair and world standards and a miracle happens and a family's restored.
So. Yes.
That is the hard part of counseling is when couples will not listen to you. Yeah. You know, you give them advice and they just do what they want. Our divorce lawyer that we had on a couple of shows ago, he always said, you know, when he's with couples at the beginning, before they've gotten married, you can't tell them anything negative about their spouse. Mm. And then when they're in his office about to divorce, you can't tell them anything positive about their spouse, their spouse. And I think that's so true. So do you guys have a process of when people come to you, do they have to, what if they don't listen to you? Will you still meet with them? What is that?
Well, a lot of times when couples come in, it's not unusual that both of them have an agenda that the other person is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the other person may be more of the problem, but I try to level the playing field early, first session. So I have this statement that I ask them, let's reject this statement that I'm suffering more than you. Mm. And let's embrace the statement, we're both suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's gonna take a team effort and us with the help of the Lord to pull out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And the us is like your marriage. Your marriage needs your help. And if you both don't jump in and go into the ICU and help the marriage, then you're gonna be in trouble. If a person enters counseling and you have two humble hearts, you know, you were talking about the hardened heart. It can be a disastrous situation. But if both people sitting on the couch have humble hearts before the Lord, miracles happen.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. Miracles happen.
It's true.
But when one person digs their heels in thinking they are justified in doing that, that's when marriage counseling becomes extremely laborious and unproductive.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And I would say to many, if not all, of the clients that I've had the privilege to walk with marriages, one of the first things that I'll talk about, usually session two, or it just depends on the flow of the conversation, but I will let them know, if your number one goal is to save your marriage, there's a great chance your marriage will not be saved.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, I do believe that much of our marital problem is symptomatic of my own problem with the Lord. And that can be both or one of the spouses. But I will go so far, and I stand on it because I can't think of one exception. If both couples, to your point about the humble hearts, would say, my number one goal is to get healthy with the Lord and get right with Christ. Like, He is my number one goal in this journey of counseling. It's 100% success rate in my counseling profession over 20 years. I cannot think of one couple where both individuals did not say, that's going to be my number one goal as we move forward. My personal walk with God, growing being transformed, mm-hmm. and that marriage is saved. Mm-hmm. And so I think when people aren't compliant is really what you're saying. They don't right. want to follow you.
Yeah.
You can hang with them for so long, but at some point, you know, you just say, hey, I don't know if my time with you is beneficial for you. Mm-hmm. And rarely am I going to cut off the client, yeah. but I am going to bring it to their awareness that I think the way we're progressing in counseling is not going to benefit you. Mm-hmm. Something has to shift yeah. if you want things to change.
Mm-hmm. And there's something very powerful. When we bring a biblical worldview into counseling, mm-hmm. it doesn't ultimately become about saving the marriage. It becomes about God's glory. And it becomes the process of marriage counseling becomes a process in which we are truly seeking to be conformed to the image of Christ. Mm-hmm. And so early on in the counseling process, I will often point to Philippians 2, our model, Christ. You know, if you want to, a lot of times people are coming into the office with a power struggle. They want, one person wants it one way, the other wants it another. So I reframe the word power through the lens of Philippians 2, mm-hmm. where you see Jesus didn't consider it a thing to stay equal in the heavenlies with the Trinity, but he made himself nothing and he became a servant and he was obedient and humbled himself. And I try to encourage couples, if you want to be successful in this process, that's the kind of power that you're going to have to insert into every step of the way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah it's true. So good. It's powerful. Mm-hmm. Great question. I do want to follow up. First of all, we have some people from Colorado, Virginia, somebody from the UK is there, probably enjoying a scone and watching as we are talking right now. Maybe it's tea time over there. We you know, this process of talking about marriage, we kind of dance around certain things related to the nuances of like what it takes to have a successful marriage, right? Because there's so many different ingredients. Mm. And people don't walk into a marriage fresh, you know, like they've lived typically at least 18 years, hopefully in the legal sense of the word. But with those 18 years, they're bringing in so many things. And then if they've, you know, gone through some adult years, they're bringing even more stuff into the marriage that could be possible baggage. But what I'm talking about right now is prescriptions in marriage related to people on like Xanax, Adderall, you know, they're coming into a marriage and they're relying on prescriptions to fix a lot of their issues. And Dr. Lelick, one of the things I thought was amazing is that you have this program called Oasis. It's Oasis with an I.
Yes. Yes.
And you treat people, the neuro side of what you do, you treat people and you're able to kind of maybe point them in a different direction other than the pharmacy related to fixing some of those issues. But in our experience, more often than not, people, especially adults, are heavily medicated in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that sometimes that's positive because we have a story that could tell that there's actually a positive nature to people who are struggling and there's a medication that can solve that. But also, when you're overly prescribed in America, there's a lot of couples dealing with issues, like neurological issues, bipolar. If you're bipolar, you need medication typically, if you're clinically diagnosed.
Yeah.
But you have a program now that's been proven to cure or help things like Tourette's and things like ADHD. So just kind of go through that motion real quick about what's going on in your world related to that.
Yeah. So, you know, speaking to Xanax specifically, I mean, that's a big deal in our culture. Everybody's taking Xanax. And I encourage folks, now it's a highly addictive drug. And I encourage folks to, if you're on that, go see your doctor and see if you can find another way. If you're coming to me for counseling for anxiety, one of my first requests is going to be, we need to go to your physician and stop taking Xanax. Mm-hmm. Because when you're counseling anxiety from a neurological basis, your brain doesn't rewire if it's not activated. And so what Xanax does, it sedates the amygdala. And so you can do everything we're recommending in counseling, but it's not going to help long term, because your brain cannot rewire in a sedated state. So, you know, I do see that a lot. And one of my passions as a counselor, I'm not against medication at all. Some people need that. I do believe we are an over-medicated culture. Mm-hmm. There's new studies that have come out of some major universities this year that are basically pushing hard against the chemical imbalance theory, saying that it sold us a lot of goods that were oversold in order for people to, you know, be able to push antidepressants and things like that. So we really do need to, I want to rethink those kind of things for the good of the people that come to see me. And the Lord brought into my world this technology called IASIS, microcurrent neurofeedback. And I stopped counseling for about 4 months once I got the technology, just so I could do it on people and make sure it wasn't quackery, because it just sounds too good to be true. And what it is, it's an electroencephalograph where we put different leads on your scalp, and we have protocols that we follow, and it's putting 3 picowatts of energy into your brain, which is less than what you get when you put your cell phone up to your ear. And what it's doing, it is elevating the parasympathetic nervous system, which is your rest and digest system. And anytime the parasympathetic is elevated, the sympathetic has to calm down, and that's your fight or flight. And so we can't say that we're treating your anxiety or we're treating your Tourette's, we're treating your brain. But what we have seen is a profound impact on young kids who, the parents show me a video of them squirming on the couch like they're having a seizure, but it's Tourette's. And they have not been able to find any cure. And they we take them through our program with the microcurrent. And 10 to 15 sessions, they no longer have that struggle.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Same things with ADHD, anger, depression, anxiety. And again, it, we're not yet allowed by the FDA to say, I'm treating your anxiety, but we're treating the brain and just seeing a myriad of positive impacts. And I often use it when I'm dealing with couples that are very volatile, and they can just go to lightning speed, hot in 2 seconds. We get them to do the IASIS because it's calming their system, so that when they start getting into these communication moments that we're trying to teach them, their system is more ready to do that.
Stephanie, do I need that?
Yeah. Are you taking patients?
I'll take that.
She wants to recommend somebody for
that. Well, and we're a witness. One of our family members had, we had the privilege to go through the IASIS for anger, and saw dramatic improvement. And it's just a, it's an example of how the mind, body, soul, God created us all connected. It influences.
And how many sessions did you say?
We will do 10 sessions and then we'll assess. And it's, and then if we think we need more, we'll do 10 more. So it's typically 10 to 20 on the issue will resolve. Obviously, if somebody takes a hit out there in life and gets some kind of trauma or tragedy, they can come back in for a shot, so to speak. But typically 10 to 20, and we don't see folks again.
So explain this to me, because like for an ADHD medication, it's actually, which sounds crazy, it's giving a stimulant to somebody who's overstimulated already, but it's forcing blood flow to the front of the brain to allow for the that part of the brain to begin to focus and bring executive functioning skills and things of that nature to the forefront, which wouldn't be there just left alone by itself. So this treatment is doing something similar. It's activating the brain in ways that maybe pushes, I'm asking a question, pushes maybe the energy to places where it calms down those reflexors in those instances where your brain's trying to go back to behaviors that are odd or flawed. And it's is it just retraining your brain? Is that what it's doing?
So the brain gets entrained. And so we get into these locked patterns, brain patterns that can become chronic, like with anxiety or ADHD. What this does, it disentrains the brain. It's a natural just tap of energy into the brain that helps the brain disentrain on its own. So it's very naturopathic. It's a natural way to help the brain do what God created the brain to do. I think a part, I can't, don't quote me on this in terms of research, but I think a big piece on the focus is that this particular technology focuses on the delta wave, and the delta wave does not need to be really active during waking hours. We want the delta wave to should be most active in our deepest sleep. And so this particular device does help people get into that delta range sleep, which we need to clean our brains from toxins and things of that nature. So I think that has a big part to play in how it affects folks with focus issues.
Addictions as well. I saw that it may help with addictions.
And, it does help with addictions.
Yeah, that's great. That's
fascinating.
Great information. Awesome. For people out there that may want to use that as a means to an end. Mm-hmm.
So have you seen marriages in your office, couples that go through this? I mean, is there a success rate?
I don't have an exact success rate, but I do believe with more volatile couples that have a very hard time regulating during conflict, so they can't keep their tempers down or they shut down because of anxiety. I do believe it's extreme. They have self-reported to me that they've known a difference when they are doing the ISIS along with marriage counseling, that it does help them implement the communication techniques that we're working on.
Wow.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So good.
I think that's what the interesting part of that is, and this is a way I personally believe. Now, this is, I'm ordained, but I'm not a pastor. I'm a marketer with, you know, a CEO position at a marriage ministry. And so take that for what it's worth. When I think about God, think about Jesus, I think about the fact that he created the heavens and the earth, and that the science is just as important as the spiritual side of it, right? So the brain patterns, everything that you're talking about, it's almost like we are tapping into something that he already knew, and that it's not a mystery. So we can pray that anxiety will be taken away. And I think that can oftentimes, just the prayer and that meditation process on scripture can lead to a healthy state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
But more often than not, I think that tapping into what God and how he created our bodies and our minds, and using technology to go back to some of the basics of how we were wired, is also part of God's given plan for our lives. I don't want my life, at least, to be so locked in that I can't use treatments or technology or even medicine to help improve my life, just because I believe that God has to be the one that divinely touches my life. And I think so many people get trapped in those kinds of, it's their own man-made belief system that keeps them from help.
Yes.
And this technology that you're using could be a way for them to see treatment through a different lens.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They could be prayerful, they could be in church, they could be going through all the right motions, but still struggling. And it's okay to use something like this to at least check that box and see if it would work or not. Because I think a lot of times people feel defeated and they've been praying for years and nothing's happened. Mm-hmm. And then again, like we said last week, sometimes it's just your testosterone levels are off and you need to check in on some of the things that are going on. So we have some questions right now. This is a question from Lynchburg, Virginia. I think, Susan, this would be great for you to answer. I truly feel that my wife and I have been called to the marriage ministry and have been accepted into that at our church. We've been doing it for over the last several months now, but she has now said she feels she is not called to do that and wants out of it. But the church needs both of them in the ministry. He's not sure what to do. Feel like he says he feels that we made a commitment and now have to tell them what we can no longer do because she wants out of it. Yeah. So this is a couple that is committed to marriage ministry in the church, and now one of them wants to back out of the marriage ministry.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I think he's feeling awkward about the fact that he was committed to this and needs to be able to have some support there, but doesn't want to do marriage ministry by himself.
Yes.
How would you counsel them?
Yes, absolutely. I think one of the first places that you have to start is asking, have you stopped and had conversation with your wife to understand her? Where is she at? Because something's driving the change in her response. Before, it sounds like that this couple was all in together. We want to do marriage ministry at our church. And then there's been some kind of shift. And so really getting to the bottom of what's going on in her heart. What is going on with, does she feel insecure to step forward in that? Or are things coming to the surface in your own marriage that she's thinking, you know, we can't walk into helping other people until we get some things healed in our own marriage. So there's really a lot of question marks that I think you have to begin to take a look at. And before you focus on not pleasing or disappointing the people that you already committed to, I think that the first priority is you and your wife being on the same page, that you're together. And I think there's such a wonderful space, both with the husband and the wife, where we do challenge and stretch each other of, hey, you know, once you understand where you both are, it could be that he's there to cheerlead her on and to help her stretch past her comfort zone. Or it may be that there's some things going on inside of her where he has to let that go for this moment and say, you know what, it'll be God's timing. I don't want to force this marriage ministry at the expense of my marriage. Mm-hmm. That would be a very upside down motivation to move forward. Mm-hmm. And I think the real element is none of us want to disappoint people when we've said, hey, we're all in. But the reality in life is that things do change. And I believe your church would understand if God was redirecting your path in this season and just to communicate with them.
Overly communicate.
Yes.
As a follow-up question, how often, well, let me say this, I think it's very often, but for couples in marriage ministry or even pastors, senior pastors, and their marriage isn't necessarily the poster child for a good, healthy relationship, and they're trying to help people in their church. How do you counsel those types of leaders out there that are trying to make it work publicly, and their marriage is on shaky ground behind the scenes, and it may not be on the verge of divorce, but they're just chronically, you know, fighting, and possibly there's some potential pitfalls for their relationship, but they have to be shiny, happy people on the stage and make sure everyone feels good about their relationship. But at the end of the day, they end up avoiding talking about marriage, or they end up avoiding really dialing into that culture of marriage because their own marriage is not necessarily feeling stable. If somebody's in that state as a pastor or a leader, or it could be just like a home group leader, how would you coach them to be able to walk a path to where they feel better getting help, so that they're not you know, exposing themselves, but they're getting help? Because I think we've even felt this way as our relationship is, if you're a pastor, you're considered an expert. And if you're in the marriage space, you're considered an expert, but where do you go for help?
Oh,
how
good.
Do you keep your marriage healthy?
No, this is very good. And this is personal because I am a licensed counselor. I am a, you know, pastor's wife and in ministry with my husband. I think it begins at understanding the human condition. We have to normalize our situation that we're all in the same boat, in the sense of we all battle sin and it's real. It's not just a churchy word. It's a condition of our soul that we're born with. Psalm 51 says from the womb. And so when you're married and you're in a position of ministering to others and their marriages, don't minimize the sickness of your own soul, or if your sickness always progresses, if it's untreated, if it's undealt with, if it's not exposed and diagnosed per se, it's going to progress and it's not going to be pretty. And so I think the first step, if you're working with marriages or in church life, understanding you have the same condition. I can't tell you how many times in 20 years I've sat with people, wonderful people in places of pain, and they'll be sharing their story. And one of our goals is to get to the root of how we got here and what's driving this behavior, what's driving these emotions. And so many times I'll sit there and be like, I struggle with that too. I have the same struggle. And it's almost as though God is, he's a multitasker. I've had the privilege to help them, but he's also like, hey, check yourself over here at that selfishness. Here's where it can lead. And it's just a living proof example of things progress. So I really believe there is, you cannot overstate the importance of tending our own garden of the soul and being willing to go to trusted people. And that can be hard. It can be hard to find trusted people when you're in a place of leadership that you can go to, but I believe God makes a way. And if you begin to seek those people, he'll lead you to them where you can get the help that you need so you can be strong and be able to breathe hope into other relationships.
Okay, I have another follow-up question for you. And these questions are going to get harder as I get.
Let's go.
No, this will be the final one. This is something I feel like is important because, you know, if you're walking through something as a leader, oftentimes that story can be powerful and a testimony and help others, encourage others. But how soon do you reveal that? Ooh. Because I think that's the challenge, is you reveal it too soon, and people think you're not an expert because your marriage might be in a bad place.
Yeah.
But if you don't reveal it soon enough, then you're not giving people the hope and the encouragement that they need.
Mm-hmm. So how soon? It's got to be case by case. And, you know, some words we say and you feel like, oh, that's just a churchy answer. I believe it to my core. You've got to ask the Lord and hear the Holy Spirit's direction. Listen to his voice. God, is it time for us to share the journey that we've been through? Is it time? And how much are we to share? And together as a couple, you've got to be on the same page with that. Again, you don't want to take your relational struggles or hard places and position it as a platform for your ministry when your marriage is the first priority. Mm-hmm. You've got to really make sure, God, have we allowed the work to be done in us before we go and try to take that and use it as a platform? And platform can sound almost negative. The better way is to help other people. But again, it's like the oxygen mask in the airplane. They always tell you to put yours on first mm-hmm. before you put on someone else's. Mm-hmm. I think it's a similar mindset. Yeah. And that is case by case. So I don't think there's never a time when you can't be still working through problems that you can't use those in real time. But I think it has to be you're in it together. You're in agreement. One spouse is not pushing or forcing the other before that person is ready to share their hard place. Mm. But there is power in authentic testimony.
I agree with that. Yeah. And you don't want to process your trash in front of everyone. That's never pretty. But everything's different. Like, I think case-by-case basis is really important because, you know, if you're struggling, for example, if your pastor's and you're struggling with infertility, that's a different struggle mm-hmm. than, you know, if you're struggling with, you know,
adultery.
Yes.
Please don't bring that to the stage. Yeah. Not process that openly. So, I mean, the whole mindset of being in marriage ministry leadership is great. A lot of people are encouraging other couples out there, and they're possibly called to do that mm-hmm. in a full-time basis. But then you kind of have to be, there's this tension there because you're real, the humanity, real people that have real struggles, and you can't always reveal those things. But at some point that's actually helpful for people to mm-hmm. see the struggle.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I'm always just curious how people process when they reveal those sorts of things. Great answers. I have some questions for you, Dr. Lulick.
All right.
Jonathan in the chat says, my wife told me 2 years ago, we separated, went to counseling and a marriage intensive. She told me on the way home from the intensive, she wanted a divorce and is now dragging her feet by not filling out the paperwork. He's showing up for court, but not making any stride to resolve the marriage. He's been in counseling for 2 years and finally got fired by his counselor because he hit all the growth goals in the counseling session. But now he's got a wonderful feeling. He's thriving and taking care of his kids, but he's not sure what to do in the season. So he's waiting for, I guess, the divorce to finalize. His wife's dragging his feet. What thoughts would you give him right now in terms of encouraging him as he's walking through this process?
Well, I would encourage him for certain to embrace the beautiful truth in Romans that in all things, God is working to conform us into his image. Mm. So it's a season of just continuing to contemplate his own heart. You know, he's in a different chapter, it sounds like, in terms of marriage. And so as he's entering into that, how is the Lord wanting to shape him? What values are rising to the top for him? How can he press into his community, hopefully, to continue to find support? But keeping in mind that God is always working, and he's primarily concerned about the human heart and what is most important to me. And even in this time, how is he shaping how I think about my wife as she's doing this? Mm-hmm. Even that's an opportunity for him to go before the Lord regarding that. But that's a tough place. I have seen that often. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly, if things have unfolded as he's said, you know, he's been abandoned. So definitely freedom there for him mm-hmm. To continue to move forward without feeling condemned or shamed or a sense of failure.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Follow-up question for you on that then. And feel free to jump in here. You know, you have always got good follow-up questions too. Okay. You know, this mindset of fighting for your marriage by yourself. And we just had a conversation recently with a friend of ours. And, you know, this mindset where one spouse is, the trajectory is divorce. They're talking to divorce lawyers, obviously dragging your feet. You're wondering why delay the inevitable? But a lot of times it's for whatever reason, the other spouse is not committed fully to the process, but that one spouse is left hanging. How much belief should they have that God can restore that marriage? And how aggressive should they be towards, you know, pursuing a new life? Mm. And let me ask you this let's layer this in here. It's gonna get, I said the level's gonna go up.
It's getting harder and harder.
Yeah.
From a scriptural standpoint, at what point in time can he enter into a new relationship even if the divorce is not finalized by the state?
That's a tough one. Mm-hmm. as far as
here, I'd just like to apologize. Well, because
the reason I'm asking that question is because it's
important.
It's something that we've just discussed recently.
No, actually, yes, we just did have this conversation. We had a situation like that.
Yeah.
So,
you know, biblically, when I'm working with a couple like this, number one, I do want to know, it's always good, as odd as this sound is to explore your why of wanting to pursue someone that is running from you and saying they're done. Like, why are you maintaining this? Is it because you feel very insecure if you don't have this person in your life? Are you fearful of some kind of financial devastation if the marriage actually ends in divorce? And I want to process through the why. There are some people that can look me in the face and say, my why is I'm not going to pursue divorce at this point because in my conscience, I believe the Holy Spirit is saying, don't do that. And so I'm going to stand by that person and, you know, walk with them. And even looking at 1 Peter, there's a lot in 1 Peter about just walking in suffering because it's what God has called us to, and points in 1 Peter 2:23 to Jesus himself, who was reviled and persecuted and falsely accused, and he didn't revile in return. He just entrusted that whole thing to the Father who would judge all things justly. So sometimes people have, if that's their conscience, I encourage them and stand with them to stay in that space until the Holy Spirit moves in another direction. But if it's more insecurity or fear or things or control, things of that nature, then I want to deal with those issues with the person that's wanting to stay in it, because those are not good reasons to continue to try to pursue a spouse that seems like they're done. I also, you know, in the church, a lot of people feel tons of guilt if they feel like they've got to file for the divorce in these kinds of situations. So I just try to take people through the process of Matthew 18, which is go to the person to try to seek reconciliation. If that doesn't work, take others in love. If that doesn't work, will the church get involved in love to try to bring some reconciliation? And then Jesus says, if the person is still just saying, I'm not doing this, then you treat them as though they aren't believers. We're not making a judgment on their hearts, but we're just saying at this point, that's how we have to look at this situation. And then in Corinthians, Paul says, if an unbelieving spouse leaves, let them go. And so the Lord provides some wisdom for Christians in these very hard situations where a person can move on without feeling that they've completely sinned against the Lord in doing that. Yeah.
But being romantic with somebody right now for him, other than his wife who's delayed divorce, so, is okay.
No, I would discourage that completely until all of that paperwork is finalized. And then probably a year or two after that, getting through the struggle of being divorced. I mean, that's a big transition. The final papers, that's a turning point. That's a milestone. And so a person might think there it's been a year or two since the papers have been in the works and they haven't been signed. But once they're signed, that's a new starting point. And you can't just assume you're going to process that the same way you're processing it currently when you're not yet divorced. So I would discourage a person from emotionally getting involved with anyone until a divorce is finalized. And then even after that, I think there's probably work that needs to be done.
What if God brings somebody to their life? I'm just bringing up the reality.
He's bringing all the arguments.
I agree with you. I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I'm just asking questions specifically because everyone will say, well, you know, it's, am I supposed to put my life on hold? You know, if this person is now, because a lot of times the person who's delaying the divorce has already moved on, is seeing somebody else. So this person is just left alone to live their life, raising the kids. They're healthy from their counselor's perspective. And at some point, you know, you're trapped by the state, you're trapped by the documents, trapped by the paperwork, and you want to move on, and your life is, maybe you're at church and you've met someone and you're just kind of waiting for all that to happen. And I hear you saying, wait, I think from a healthy emotional standpoint, it's good. But I'm talking about from a judgment seat of Christ standpoint too. Do you feel like God would judge somebody, their heart, if they were waiting for the inevitable to happen with the paperwork and they ended up developing a relationship with somebody? Maybe it's not physical, but it's emotional. I just don't know that I understand the gray area of where things begin to look like a new season, a new chapter in somebody's life, spiritually, emotionally, as opposed to being just forced to live in almost a prison where you can't go on with your life until the paperwork's signed. And so I don't, there may not be a great answer other than what you've said, which I agree with. I agree with the strategy of making sure the paperwork's signed and then waiting for your emotional state to improve.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I agree with everything that you shared. I think there's no easy answer to this question, and there's sympathy and compassion for the person who feels like they're trapped.
Yes.
I would want to breathe hope that the Lord, God says that, you know, man makes our plans, but he directs our steps. And he's not bound by your wife's or estranged wife's behavior, and he's not bound by the legal documentation. It's bigger. And so rather than look at your life as I'm in holding, because we can even do this when we're single before we've met our spouse. You know, my life's on hold until I find that spouse and my life really starts and I have a family. But to truly, and it's very difficult when you're suffering at the same time.
Yes.
But to say, okay, God, I'm not waiting on my life to begin. I'm going to live it right now. And I want to explore these feelings of feeling trapped because I have these longings for a future relationship. But just like when we're a teenager having the choice of, am I going to follow God's design now with dating or in college? Am I going to follow his design now? I think when you're in this space with an estranged spouse, you're faced with the same question all over again. Mm-hmm. God, what's your design? And I think maybe another perspective, you know, you mentioned, will God judge me? And maybe another perspective of that is not, will God judge me, but God, what is your best plan for my life? That's the path I want to take. And I don't want to take a shortcut because I'm attracted to this person if it's not your timing for me to take those next steps. And it's difficult. It's challenging, but I would just pray to change the mindset of feeling trapped and hopeless to God is still in control of my life, and he's bigger than an attorney. He's bigger than the state. He's bigger than my estranged wife. So Lord, I'm listening. What are my next steps? I want to follow your best path for life, whatever that next step looks like.
It's good.
And I would say too, you know, one of the common things in some of the stuff that we've talked about today, and one of the reasons why we support counseling so much and have people like you guys on all the time is that I think it's important to be submitted to a counselor, you know, or friend or somebody that's, you know, can speak into your life. Because what I would say to him is, even if he has a lot of questions, he needs someone that can go and speak into his life, give him wise counsel. You know, sometimes you get blind spots on what's the right thing to do, and just being submitted and having someone that you can ask these hard questions to. That's just what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. The procedure process of the reality of the situation he's in, there's probably more questions than there is answers in this season for him.
Yeah.
So I want to shift to prenups.
Prenups. Segue.
Let's go.
Now, I've evolved on this issue, mind you. So I want to talk about this. Now, the cost of divorce, an uncontested divorce, uncontested. You want to walk in, you both want to get it over with. You have no issues related to personal property, kids or whatever, is going to cost you anywhere between $1,500 and $5,500, depending on the state you live in. A contested divorce, on average, is going to start around $40,000 or $50,000 and up, depending on the process and how much you need to divide up. There's forensic accountants that get involved. There's all sorts of, you know, structures related to kids and alimony and child payments and all that kind of child support payments. It's messy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
For a young couple getting married, like your daughter who just got married, I would not encourage any prenups in that situation. When somebody's older and they have more property, they've built a business on their own, they've got assets that are now at play with their potential heirs, kids, grandkids, and there's a new spouse involved, I think prenups are intelligent. I think that there's an opportunity to now structure financially your estate to where everyone can feel good about the reality of the future. Because Stephanie and I, if we build wealth together, and then some point in time, you're gone. I'm so sorry. You have to leave in this scenario. It's got
to
be you. And then I remarry, and then those assets that we've created together are now bonded to a new spouse with unprotected, with no prenup. then that future spouse at some point, if I died, would have access to all the assets, and then our kids together may not have anything going forward. There are real scenarios like that that happen all the time.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so for me, prenups are intelligent when they're constructed with the end in mind, knowing that there's a potential for life to happen, death or from future divorce. I think what prenups probably speak to more than anything is this is a precursor to an eventual divorce. So you're already setting up the marriage in the beginning for divorce because you're signing a prenup. So you're telling somebody, I don't trust you fully. I don't give you everything. You don't have access to all of that. And I think in the beginning of a new relationship with no kids, that's important. But I think as you get down the road and you're marrying later in life, even if it's your first marriage, I think prenups help to resolve some of those divorce proceedings that get so ugly, because who built what? Whose was it in the beginning? Mm-hmm. What happened? And it doesn't have to be like a, I'm keeping you from it. It's just an estate minded structure, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But what would y'all say to that?
Yeah. You want to hit it first? Do you want me to?
It's up to you.
What's your thoughts on prenups?
That's a big one.
Yeah. Let's talk about prenups, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a tough question. if someone comes into my office with that conversation, I think that's a fluid conversation. And I want to know, what is your ultimate aim in doing this? There's this idea, it's called teleology. And it's the concept that your heart is always aimed at an ultimate target. And that ultimate target drives why you're doing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. It kind of brings us into this mindset as Christians that we're beings of worship. And the target always has to be God's glory. And God's glory is most lived out as we're loving Him and each other. And so I think in a complicated conversation like that, I would want to really weave that in as we're having this conversation, and you guys are making a mutual decision, our baseline is what's it gonna look like to love God and others. So I don't have a you should or shouldn't. It's probably gonna be more fluid with me. And even in that conversation, there could be red flags that pop up as motivations that aren't the best for doing something like that. Mm-hmm. Or it might be a situation where both feel extremely good about it and feel this is operating in wisdom, mm-hmm. at which point I would encourage mm-hmm. that. Yeah. But it's ultimately, how am I glorifying God? Are we loving Him? And are we loving each other as we're processing a very complicated conversation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it is a complicated conversation. And I think, again, back to it, case by case, but looking at it through a biblical worldview. Why? Because that's what we believe is going to be the best, most thriving marriage for that couple, if it's in line with God's path. And so I agree. I may have some difference, different thoughts on what we're discussing. I think when a young couple gets married, I've not seen in my practice where a prenuptial agreement was faring well for the couple. Mm-hmm. What I found is that with one or the other, it bred distrust mm-hmm. in the relationship. Are we all in? And so I think starting at the baseline of just the architect, what is marriage? For this reason, a man and a woman will become one. What does oneness look like as we talk about finances and our belongings? With that, when you bring up the older couple coming together, a conversation, maybe one of them or both of them have kids. And I think in that moment, there's an opportunity where, you know what, we can let the legal system work for us. And together as a couple, let's decide how we want to care for our children that came from our other spouses. How do we want to do that in the case of death, in the case of that us no longer being in marriage? I would say per death. I would be hesitant to approach a prenup with divorce already in mind. I think that begins to mm-hmm. talk to the why, as you were discussing, that I'm entering in this with a lot of escape hatches mm-hmm. out of our relationship. I don't think that's ever going to be the foundation mm-hmm. of a healthy marriage. But if you're looking at it together and you're one and you're in agreement of, we want to take care of our assets wisely. We want to take care of our children if one of us passes, and make sure that you, my spouse, are cared for. Mm-hmm. Because I've seen it go both ways, where the children come in and they take everything because there wasn't wisdom.
Well, that's young marriage is absolutely not. I don't feel like there's any ground rules for that at all. Like, I would never recommend a prenup for a first marriage, especially, but especially a younger marriage.
Yes.
20s and 30s.
No,
getting into your 40s
kids.
And 50s and 60s, you know, whether there's a loss of a spouse or a divorce, then you get into waters, especially in the 50s, 60s decades of couples, where it just gets really complicated. Yeah. And you just, you talk about, there's a two-sided nature to that coin. You know, there's the side of escape hatches for, you know, divorce. But there's also the other side, which is it just resolves those fights before they even happen.
Yes.
You can protect the kids, you can protect the future, and then you can live in your state of mind knowing that everything's good. As you get older, you know, things just get a little bit different. You see the world differently. Mm-hmm. And when you're young, you don't want to put those impediments in place related to relationships. I don't want her to feel like I'm keeping something from her, because we're building our life together. But two mature adults should see that as you're getting married in your 50s and 60s, the world's just different. You have kids and possibly grandkids, and you want them to be just as successful in their lives. And I've seen it where the new spouse has a family they're bringing in, and now they're affected. And so if that spouse that they married passes away and there's no protection, all those kids and that wife can control now all the assets and even leave out the kids of the spouse that built all of that wealth.
Yeah.
And it's a tragedy.
Yes.
And it's avoidable.
Yes.
It's avoidable.
Yeah.
But I think people in a dangerous way just automatically shove prenups into this heresy category. Mm-hmm. And as an organization, I just got a Slack from one of our team members. I am not endorsing prenups. As an organization, Excellent Marriage is not endorsing prenups. All I'm saying is talk to your lawyers and make sure you understand. And at the end of the day, you don't have to sign the prenup. You don't have to sign it. Nobody's forcing you to sign it. So if you want to be in a relationship with somebody in your 50s, 60s, 70s, but what I'm witnessing right now too in the older generation is they're just not getting married because they would rather just sleep together, live together, whatever it is, and not go through the process of getting married. So in that sense of the word, it's better to have a prenup and be in a holy covenant than it is to live together because you're scared of the intertwining and intertwining of your physical assets. Mm-hmm. We're never gonna get.
I know, you saved face on that one.
How did I save face?
Right there, saying.
we don't endorse it?
Yeah.
Listen, I wish we lived in a vacuum. We don't. This is a real world. These are things that people talk about every single day. Mm-hmm. Prenups are a part of society. And Linda Lane, though, here in the comments section says she had a prenup drafted because her future husband was going to be incarcerated for an auto accident, and she wanted to protect her income in case he lost everything. He then turned on her, so she doesn't recommend. So there you go. There's people that have had, you know, experiences with that don't recommend it. I'm just saying it's an interesting conversation. There was a comment in here about the Western world endorsing prenups, but we... just going back to the fact that we live in a society where the legal system is set up to extract every single dollar you have through the divorce proceeding. So if you're getting married, it's going to cost you to get married, and it's going to cost you to divorce. And I hope instead they visit christiancounseling.com.
Yeah.
Metroplexcounseling.com. What is your website?
Metroplex Counseling. Yeah.
I wish they would go see you before they do that, because it would save them a whole lot of pain and suffering.
Yes.
And then Susan, you're an LPC, you've practiced for many years, you're kind of taking a hiatus, but possibly seeing maybe future patients, do you call them patients?
Clients, yeah.
Clients.
But Keystone Church is a fantastic church for couples to get integrated with. Mm-hmm. Y'all have a great, beautiful marriage, especially you and Brandon have a really great relationship. As senior pastors, you're in a good season of life where you're kind of, you've gone through the baby phase, teenage phases. You're in the sweet spot now where you're kind of empty nesting, on the verge of empty nesting. Mm-hmm. So you've seen all that. And then you're leading the church very well, Keystone Church. Tell them about the church
Thank you. We're so excited right now what God is doing at Keystone Church. Our heart is for families. When we planted the church 20 years ago, our desire was to look around the landscape of our city and that we would be part of helping the divorce rate lower. That was a big desire and conversation we had in the very beginnings of the church. And so that's our passion, is to see life change happen. We're addicted to life change. change. And we think it happens amazingly when it's inside Christian community of the church. And so, yeah, come see us. We pray that you'll encounter God when you do and meet some really great people along the way.
Started at a furniture store. Now you're in a beautiful property right off 1709 Keller, Texas, and right on the border of Keller and Southlake. It's a great place to call home if you're looking for a church home. And then Dr. Lelick, talk a little bit about your practice, what's going on with Metroplex Counseling. What is it called now? I think I keep calling Metroplex Counseling.
Yeah, so when we started the brain treatment, we changed the name to Metroplex Wellness and Counseling.
Okay.
Because we really are emphasizing body and soul. My background is biblical counseling. I founded the Association of Biblical Counselors, which is ChristianCounseling.com. Mm-hmm. And I'm just more and more convinced of the soul and the body are very, very important in terms of the process of change. And so we have added the brain treatment, the ISIS. We do mental health nutrition. We actually have a massage therapist that's on staff with us. We recently, just this month, opened a beautiful location in Midlothian in this huge, wonderful old house on Main Street. So we're excited about that. But we have an office in Fort Worth, Aledo, and Midlothian.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
So you really are doing body, mind, and soul?
We are trying. Mm-hmm. Yes.
The website is metroplexcounseling.com.
That's correct.
And it's a great place to find help as well. And so I encourage everyone out there that if you're looking for, especially the Metroplex, Dallas Metroplex, a good place to just talk to somebody and get information about how to maybe go about ISIS.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like we need to create a song about ISIS, PSA's public service about it. Yeah. But if you're interested in that, I would highly recommend it. I'm actually curious about it now. Maybe she wants me to try it.
Sign him up.
My issues.
You need some.
Okay. And I would say, well, just a quick question from an age range standpoint, how young do you see patients with that?
Oh, we'll go 3 years old, 4 years old.
Okay. Wow. Yeah.
The younger the brain, the more malleable. So.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. We treat. Oh, another autism. We've seen children speak for the first time.
Oh, wow.
4 years old, and they say mom for the first time in our counseling center doing that treatment.
Yeah. Wow. It's amazing.
It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a great resource. Okay. Well, thanks for being on the show today.
It's great.
Yes. Yeah.
Thanks for
having me. I hope you all come back. And I think it's super helpful to not just give everyone an opportunity to hear from you, but to just raise awareness about what you're doing in the space that you're doing it in, both from a church and LPC side, but also from the practice that you see couples and individuals every single day, their issues, the trends. We live in a really weird society right now where the stress that's coming from social media, that's coming from all these sorts of pain points is just magnifying. Mm-hmm. The kids that are growing up with social media, it's going to be interesting to see what happens 20, 30 years from now when these young kids get married. In their whole world.
We're all going to be at your office because we're all going to need our brain rewired.
I know.
Believe it.
We'll have to have one of those like pocket versions where it's just wired to your head all the time. Yeah. And you can just set a timer to it.
Just zap. Can we just like zap?
Ooh, the remote control.
Yeah, exactly. So thanks everyone for joining us today on XO Live. I hope you've enjoyed this program. It's been a great time just answering your questions, and thanks for putting those into the chat. I will say again, we have the I Will Couples Devotional brand new out from Jimmy and Karen Evans. This is a wonderful resource for you to give away during the Christmas season. If you get it from Amazon, I guarantee you they'll ship it to you. I can't guarantee that. I do not work for Jeff Bezos. But that's probably the best way to get it before Christmas is Amazon. It's coming out this week. So get that as well. And I want to say, please subscribe to our channels. Dave and Ashley Willis have their own YouTube channel. Subscribe there. My parents, Jimmy and Karen, have a Marriage Today YouTube channel. Of course, the XO Marriage channel. Please subscribe, like this video, share it with your friends, and make sure that you are letting everyone know that XO Marriage is a resource as they're going through the Christmas season, as they're entering into the new year with the eventual, we're going to try to cancel this holiday, but it's divorce day, and we don't want this to be a thing anymore. So if you need help, the cost of divorce is expensive, but mediation is available. So exomarriage.com, you'll find what we do for mediation. These are intensive. So this is different than counseling. This is 1 and 2 day intensives for your marriage. I encourage you to check it out. It has an 80% success rate for helping couples avoid the devastation of divorce. So if you're in that season, you need help, go to exomarriage.com. There's no excuses. It's worth the investment because divorce is definitely not what you want to encounter. All right, everyone, hope you have a great Christmas. We'll be seeing you back again after the new year, 2 weeks off, and then we'll be back. Hope everyone has a great Christmas. God bless you. Bye-bye.